If you haven't read Lord of the Flies, you're probably going to have to in school one day. Let me give you an abridged version for when that time eventually comes. The Lord of the Flies is a book about a bunch of little British boys who got marooned on a deserted island, and the book tells the story about what the boys do to survive the elements, but also themselves. Within like a week on the island, the boys devolve into complete savages, covering themselves in face paint and killing a piggy. I said too much. And when I read the book in high school, I thought having the boys turn savage so quickly wasn't all that accurate. As a former young boy myself, I was insulted that William Golding thought that us little boys were so heartless. But then I remembered all the things that happened at my scout camp, Camp Geronimo, and I realized that Lord of the Flies is still inaccurate. The boys would have gone savage way faster. Listen, I'm a cautious person when I'm hanging around the guys. In PE, the other boys would be playing this game called Quarters, where you would fling quarters at people's knuckles until they bled, but I wouldn't play that game because it's dangerous and I'm a loser. Or when I was at a party and someone wanted to play the knife game to show off how good their hand-eye coordination was, I wouldn't play that game either because I needed my hands to draw. But something about being with the guys in the middle of the woods, I would live on the edge. Every summer, our troop stayed at this camp called Camp Geronimo, named after the Apache Indian who was the first person to yell Geronimo while doing a sick backflip into his pool. One time, me and a couple other boys, I don't remember who started it, but we were playing with matches, and okay, I know what you're thinking, but nothing bad happened, okay? We just accidentally lit some dried bushes on fire, and it got somewhat out of control, but it's okay, it's fine, okay? We told the scoutmaster that there was a loose fire spreading faster than we could put it out, and he got everyone in the troop to stomp on it, and we never got in trouble. What were we doing with the matches? Oh, we were just lighting them and throwing them at each other. Anyway, about 30 other scout troops attended Camp Geronimo, and we would spend a whole week sleeping in tents and earning merit badges. Most of the camp honestly felt like school, but outside. Like, when you got to the camp, you were given a schedule of classes, and for the next 7 days, you would go to those classes and learn and fill out packets and sometimes even have homework. Which probably helped us not devolve into savages. I mean, sure, the classes weren't as boring as English or geometry. Geronimo's classes were wilderness survival, kayaking, or bear self-defense. Earning a merit badge required two things. The first thing, you had to write stuff down. Name and point out the major parts of a kayak. Kayak. Explain to your counselor the hazards you are most likely to encounter while participating in kayaking activities. Bears. And the second part of the merit badge, you had to actually go out and do stuff. Capsize the kayak, swim it and the paddle to the shore, and if you don't make it, the bears will get you. I never got the kayaking merit badge. You had to be at least 12 to go to Geronimo, but you could go as an 11-year-old if a parent was coming with you. And at the time, my dad was a camp counselor. My birthday was May 14th, and Geronimo was at the end of May, so I barely made the cutoff as the youngest person going. Geronimo was a big step from spending 3 days at Cub Scout Day Camp to spending a week in the wilderness. What made it worse was I was going to be spending a whole week with all the mean older scouts and my dad. There was this one scout named Paul. When I was 11, he was 15. So naturally, he would pick on me and make fun of me. Ha ha, I get it. I'm small, so I suck. But silver lining, he got fatter. And a couple years ago, he reached out to me. And I had been doing the whole YouTube thing for a while. He was off starting his own business. And he wanted to do some business opportunity with me. And I just said, hey, do you want to do my merch? So now he works for me. So kids, if you ever have bullies, just become successful on YouTube and then hire them to sell plushies. He's actually a really good merch guy. He gets all my stuff into these retail stores. So if you see a Floof plushie at Hot Topic, you can say, thanks, Paul. Bullies really do make a difference. Anyway, self-promotion aside, my first year at Geronimo, I was a little bit on the very young side compared to everyone else. I was taking a class called Orienteering. The class taught us how to read maps and use a compass. And one day, it was time for our class to go on a scavenger hunt thing. We were given a list of places we had to go to, and we were supposed to use our compass and count our paces to get to each specific location. Then when we got to our destination, there would be a marker somewhere, and we would have to write down what that marker was. There were 10 different markers that we had to find, and the course was supposed to lead us in a circle. The leader who was in charge of our group and the compass was an older scout named Paul. It wasn't the merch guy, Paul, but I think it would be funnier if it was. Our group set off to the first location. Having a compass and counting your steps isn't the most accurate way of navigation, but we weren't allowed to use Google Maps, so... When we got to the spot, we had to look around for a little bit to find the marker, but we eventually found it, and then we were off to the second location. This time, the marker was harder to find. The spot we landed on was pretty far from where the marker actually was. At the third location, we couldn't find the marker. But we did see this reflective sign on a tree, and we figured that's what the marker was supposed to be, so we wrote it down. At this point, I decided to grab my own compass and give it a try. My compass pointed in a direction that was a little bit off from Paul's direction. Not by a whole lot, but just... enough. But remember, I was the little kid. Nothing I said mattered. Paul said things to me like, "Oh, you don't know how to use a compass. I bet yours is broken. I'm never going to work for you one day." And you know what? I believed him. This guy is 15 years old. Do you know how wise and experienced he is? So we kept going and struggling. We used anything we found as a marker. Some piece of trash, it's a marker. Hey, this tree has an A and an M carved into a heart. Kind of weird that it's at an all-boys camp. Do you think that it's a marker? Eventually, we all had to admit that we were completely lost. The other boys told Paul to hand over his compass, and Paul reached into his pocket, pulled out his compass, and two buzz magnets. Buzz magnets are magnets that are shaped like a bullet, and you can throw them up in the air, and they make this cool buzzing sound. They sold them at the camp store, so that's why Paul had them. And everyone immediately figured out why we were lost. For those of you who don't know how compasses and magnets work, I don't know either. I think it has something to do with them coming from outer space. A compass is supposed to point to the magnetic North Pole, and a magnet will mess up the direction a compass is supposed to point in. Paul's compass wasn't pointing to his pants the whole time. We would have been suspicious if that had happened. But because his compass was right next to a magnet, it got uncalibrated. And then we all got lost in the woods and died. And that's why I don't have an orienteering merit badge. I was upset because my compass probably wasn't broken, but I didn't stand up for myself. Because I don't do that. I have more Camp Geronimo stories, like the time me and my friend threw a Ziploc bag full of water at the older kid's lean-to, and then I ran away so fast that I threw up. But I already did a video about that, and it's 5 years old, and it's very bad, and you're not allowed to watch it. So the moral of this video is, just because you're young doesn't mean you're stupid. But it does mean you make bad videos on YouTube. Also, check your pockets before going orienteering. Going orienteering. Sounds like a tongue twister. Going orienteering. Going orienteering. Going orienteering.
And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92.
I'm 93. Do I still count?
No, Grandpa, we hate you. Just so you know, that gag was based off a comic I made back in 2014. So I wanted to make a Christmas video, but I didn't know what to talk about. So we're just going to sit here and roast marshmallows by this PNG of a fire. Do you guys know about that soccer game that happened in the middle of World War I on Christmas Day? And it was between two opposing sides, the Allies and the Central Powers? I'm not making this up. So, German and British troops were in the trenches, you know, fighting for their lives. They were in the middle of a war, after all. And on Christmas Eve, German troops started singing Christmas carols. Then the British troops responded singing their own Christmas carols. Then one thing led to another, and on Christmas Day, they started playing soccer. Well, the British troops would have called it football, and the German troops would have called it football. But I'm calling it soccer. Yeah, I know I'm a heretic. I don't think anything like that has happened in a war ever. Except for that one time in the Revolutionary War when everyone stopped fighting because the new Super Smash Brothers just came out. Merry feet! Merry feet! Tis not Falco! Wamba with combination!
Oh!
Where art thou? Okay, that was obviously a joke. Melee didn't come out for at least, like, another year. Stupid. Anyway, what I'm wondering is, do you think anyone during that game felt a little bit awkward? So, how's the war? Oh, you're fearing for your life? Well, that's good. That's good. That means we're doing a good job. Do you think whoever won the game of soccer bragged to the other team?
Ha ha! Yes! First we beat you at football, next, the world.
Ah, dang it, my marshmallow burned. Does the story of Rudolph count as a fable? What would the moral of Rudolph be? I think it would be, being different from society will be punished unless it's exploitable. Okay, I stole that quote from something I saw on the subreddit, I'm 14 and this is deep. How come no one sings any songs about any of the other reindeer? Rudolph saved Christmas once, and like, he didn't do it alone. Just because he could see through the snow, which, by the way, wouldn't have been useful in Arizona, didn't mean he carried Santa's sleigh all by himself. But no, just because you were bullied as a kid, you get your own song. Well, enough about you going down in history, Rudolph. I'm gonna make my own song about Prancer. Do, do, do. Prancer, the normal nose reindeer, had a very normal nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say, yep, that's a nose. All of the other reindeer respected him for meeting the expectations of what a normal reindeer should be like. They always let little Prancer play on his reindeer bike. Okay, I'll stop. What if the reason Rudolph had a shiny nose was because Rudolph's mom had an affair with a clown? That was based off a comic I made in 2014. Why did the three wise men bring baby Jesus gold, Frankenstein, and myrrh? What kind of baby would want that? Okay, that was also based off a comic I made in 2014. Man, 2014 was just my year. Please read my comics. You know what? I'm not done talking about Rudolph. You guys have all seen the stop-motion movie they made about him in the 60s, right? You know, about the elf who wants to be a dentist. Who wouldn't?
Weren't you at elf practice?
Well, there's one scene in the movie where Yukon Cornelius sacrifices himself to kill the abominable snowman, and he saves all of his friends, and also indirectly saves Christmas, but whatever, he doesn't get a song. But then later in the movie, he just walks through the front door, and everyone's wondering how he survived, and Rudolph even says,
But you went over the side of a cliff!
And then Yukon tells everyone the answer,
Didn't I ever tell you about bumbos?
Bumbos bounce! And then everyone just laughs it off like it was a hilarious joke and doesn't ask him any more questions. Even as a kid, I thought that was a stupid explanation. What does that mean, bumbos bounce? Like, did you two fall off the cliff, and then when you hit the bottom, just trampoline yourself all the way back up? Oh wait, no, I think I know what it means. It means the writers didn't want to kill off a character, so they just came up with a plot device to make him live. You know, because you can't have death in a kid's movie! No one dies! Not even the bad guy dies. How does Santa deliver to houses without chimneys? I think Tim Allen tried to explain it once. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this video. I kept it short so that way I have more time to spend Christmas with my family, and it also gives me more time to wrap presents. Because, you know, I'm just terrible at rapping. This video is going to be a little more educational than usual. Okay, so there's this channel that I used to really like watching called VArt. And I say used to because she doesn't really post that often anymore. She makes videos that combine two of my favorite subjects, math and art.
You like math?
Yes, okay, I like math. So VArt, I don't know her real name, made videos about math and triangles and transgenderism, and I'm going to be honest, I've kind of forgotten everything she's talked about. Hexa something, that was one of her things. But every year she's made anti-pi videos. Pi as in the math pi, remember? We're talking about math, not the... Okay, so she posts them every year on Pi Day, which is today. It's Pi Day, if you didn't know that. Let me just tell you something interesting about pi. In 1949, we started using computers to find pi, and we kept getting closer and closer as technology advanced, and we never found the true value of pi, to this day. All those pi to a million places websites? Nope, not pi. Yeah, we've gotten really, really close to pi, and yet, we're nowhere near as close. 'Cause it's infinite. But I mean, it's close enough where you physically can't measure that accurate in the real world. But it's not the true value of pi. The true value of pi goes on forever. And we haven't really gotten to the end of that. Okay, so back to VArt. There's a high chance she made a 2016 anti-pi video today, right now. So go check it out. Link in the description, if she's made one. So I guess this is a rebuttal video? About why pi is actually awesome? Oh, and I'm gonna be rebuking her 2014 video because the 2015 one was kinda stupid.
Ah, March 14th, that's just an arbitrary number on a calendar we created, yeah!
Man, shut up. And I actually wanted to make this video back in 2015, but I didn't. Instead, I just made this comic, because last year was hashtag Ultimate Pi Day. So I've actually waited a year now, so I'm excited to talk about it. Let's do it! I hope I'm not breaking any copyright laws by...
This Pi Day, I'm mad about how people worship pi for being infinite, for going on forever. First of all, pi is not infinite.
Well, yeah, it is. But that's not why it's awesome. Every number is technically infinite. You take the number 4 and you add a .0. The 4 is still the same, but in theory, you can add a 0 forever, making it technically infinite. And that's just what pi is. It's just a number. It's not infinity. No one's saying that it is.
I know, it's not about its magnitude. It's about all those digits, infinite digits, going on forever. But first of all, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. That doesn't make it not awesome. It's right there on the number line between 3 and 4. It's just a number, like I said. Y equals pi is just a straight horizontal line. You take the derivative of pi, you get 0. It's a number. It's just a number, man. Just a number.
Pi is a number, not a process.
Yeah, okay, we agree. But that doesn't make it not awesome. The speed of light is just a number. It's about what that super specific number represents.
Secondly, yeah, so it's got infinite digits. So what? 1/3 has infinite digits.
Yeah, but pi is random numbers that go on forever. And there's no pattern. That's what's so cool. Do you know what the trillionth digit of pi is? No, you don't. It's random digits with no pattern. But I know the trillionth digit of 1/3. Spoiler alert, it's 3.
There's exactly as many digits in 1/3 as in pi, as in 99.999 repeating.
Yeah, the digits of pi are random, but the number as a whole isn't random at all, which is another cool thing. It is the ratio of the diameter of a circle to its circumference. Multiply the diameter by pi, you get the circumference. Are you forgetting that?
There's an infinite number of rational numbers. For any two fractions, you can find another fraction that's between them again and again and again. There's never any fractions that are right next to each other on the number line.
Yes, irrational numbers are technically everywhere. Take the 1 millionth digit of pi, change it to 3, and you get an entirely new irrational number. It's not pi anymore. I mean, this was never pi to begin with, but you can't use this to get the circumference anymore. Nuh-uh, not good. But it's this highly specific irrational number that this special ratio occurs. Not this one, this one. It's why we made this specific irrational number its own symbol. Well, okay, we actually used a Greek letter, so it's not totally made up.
So I don't know why anyone would make a fuss about the grand infinities and forevers of a boring little number like pi.
It's not boring.
The only thing even a little weird about pi is that you do get an irrational number by taking such a simple ratio of such a simple geometric object.
Yes, thank you. It's so weird, right?
Surely that never happens with other simple ratios of other simple geometric objects. Oh, wait, they're in everything.
What? No, okay. If you take one of the sides of a square and multiply it by this number, you get the length of its diagonal between the corners. Okay, so this is the ratio of the side of a square and its diagonal. And it's just random numbers that go on forever. Kind of like pi. So why don't we celebrate this number? Why don't we have a special symbol for it like pi? Well, actually we do. It's called radical 2. Look, you just take this number, you square it, you get 2. Just plain old boring 2. That's not special. You can't square pi and get something like 10. You square pi, it's still irrational. Look at this triangle. Same deal, right? This number goes on forever. But wait, it can be written down as radical 3 over 2, just like what you did in the video. Now this one for a pentagon, we do use a symbol for it. It's a Greek symbol called phi. Phi? Phi? That's really close to pi. I wonder if that's on purpose. Now, phi is approximately this number. Kinda like pi, right? Totally, 100%ly irrational. I think we got ourselves another pi, but wait! We can rewrite it like this! Hey, side note, this number is considered the golden ratio, and it has to do when we talk about that swirly, like, seashell thing. And it can actually be found in art, so that's pretty cool. Okay, back to pi. You can't rewrite pi like any of these numbers. Pi is its own number. It stands by itself above the rest. It's not radical 2, not rad 3 over 2, but just plain old 3.1415. That's why pi is so awesome. There's a picture going around on the internet that's like, pi contains the day you were born and the day you'll die. If we give the numbers, the letters, and every possible conversation you ever had, and every conversation you didn't have. You see, now that's just stupid. That's just the nature of having random numbers go on forever. I could do the same thing on randomgenerator.org if I just generated a random digit forever. Now what does this mean? Do circles even exist? How can you have a bendy line with just straight lines? What is real? Alright, so just to finish things up, this is all bullcrap. Well, not all of it. Well, yeah, all of it. The reason why pi is actually famous and so beloved is because, let's be real, guys. It's called pi. You don't see people celebrating Pi Day because they appreciate how this irrational number is the ratio between the diameter and its circumference. They're celebrating it because it's called pi. And I think that's what happened to pi. People were like, this boring math term has a funny name. Let's celebrate it on our meaningless calendars.
And now, for the moment you've all been waiting for. da di 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 da.
This is not clickbait. I don't clickbait. You can ask my friends. So, surprise everyone. You're about to get so much Odd Ones content this year. I've been contractually obligated to keep this a secret from you for a long time now, but today's the day I'm finally allowed to tell you that we're making a Netflix show. We, meaning the entire team of amazing and talented people who worked on this show in every department, who consistently improved the quality with everything they did. This project would not have been possible without everyone's amazing work, so thank you. Oh, and speaking of amazing teams, give it up for the YouTube team who's been working hard on these videos while I've been busy on this. It takes a village to raise a child and make a season of a cartoon show. How did this all happen, I hear you ask? Well, it all started when I partnered up with a television writer named Ethan Banville, and together we came up with a show about a boy who looks and sounds and is named after me, and a crocodile.
A crocodile? You mean like the one that was in your music video, Life is Fun? Have you been working on this since 2018?
Oh, no. I mean, kind of. We pitched the show to Netflix in early 2020, but we didn't get the green light until August of 2020. So that means the entire production has been done in lockdown. All the writing, the storyboarding, the designing, the voice acting has been done with little to no human interaction. I still have yet to work in an office. I just want to lean against a water cooler and say things like, "Yo, did you catch the game last night? Is that too much to ask?" And before I go, I just wanted to thank all of you for watching my videos. I've always wanted to entertain people with cartoons, and without you watching these cartoons and supporting me, I wouldn't have had this amazing opportunity. I'm sure you're all dying to see what the team's been working on, but you'll have to wait. I will be going to some conventions in the next few months, and I plan on showing more teasers of the show until its release in sometime later this year. You can visit my website in the description and check out the new items, along with signing up for emailed updates as we get closer to the premiere date. I'm still gonna post regular videos here on YouTube. Like I said earlier, I have an amazing team working on these YouTube videos. It's just, this is why it's been longer between uploads, okay? Thank you all again, and I hope you enjoy the show. When you watch it. Later this year. And if you're planning on going to VidCon in Anaheim this year, I will be showing exclusive clips and storyboards at my panel. That's only in, like, a couple of days. You don't even have to wait that long. But if you really want to see something and you just can't wait, then I guess... See, everything worked out.
Oh, I want to be a ladder!
Let's pretend you get on a bus and it's super crowded. The only spot that's open is between two strangers. So you sit down between two people you never met and everyone is fine. Everyone's keeping to themselves, no one's making eye contact, it's perfect. Sure, your shoulders are touching, but that's just what happens. That's part of the bus going experience, you poor person. But then at the very next stop, aisle seat guy gets off. So now you and window seat guy are sitting right next to each other. But since you're in the middle, you have to be the one to decide, do you move or not? I honestly don't know what the right thing to do in that situation is. I'm conflicted. Because if you move, it would be silently telling the other person, hey, you're disgusting. I can't stand having our shoulders touch any longer, and I'm glad to finally get away from you. Ugh. But on the other hand, if I was the window seat guy, I would want the middle seat guy to become the new aisle seat guy. I wouldn't see moving as rude. I would just want his gross, disgusting body as far away from me as possible. That's not rude. But on the other hand, maybe I'm overthinking everything and most people don't even mind being this close to another human and they aren't struggling socially, I don't know. Now imagine that same situation, but with urinals. If you're in the middle urinal, do you move halfway through to the other urinal? Because I would. Are you supposed to talk to people when you're sitting 2 inches away from them? I always felt like I should say something, like, hey, did you see the game last night? I didn't, I was too busy drawing cartoons. But I realized that this is a two-way street. I'm worried about not talking to someone, But they're not talking to me either. We both agreed that there's this unwritten contract between us that we're not even going to look at each other. It got me thinking about strangers and specifically how I treat them. And how I can make money off of them. Hey-oh! I'm just kidding. That was a joke. For most of my life, I would go out of my way to avoid talking to people. I would stay in my lane, mind my own business, no eye contact. If everyone's using a urinal, I'd have to pee tomorrow. Yes, I'm lonely. But now that YouTube's the thing, I'm interacting with strangers more often than I've had to in my entire life. So I've been thinking a lot about strangers. And first of all, I think the word stranger is already an insulting label for someone just because you don't know their name. Oh, I don't know this person? They're a stranger. They're strange. I'm the normal one. They're the freaks. They probably murder people with an axe. That's always the go-to profession of a stranger, an axe murderer. But the people you see throughout your day are all humans with their own hopes and dreams, and some of them may hope to kill you, but you'll never know because you didn't ever take the time to get to know them. So I think that the people you see throughout your daily life aren't strangers. They're potential friends. Except for the weird ones, obviously. Stay away from them. And yes, I'm telling you to judge people based on their appearance. They're the ones that chose to wear anime shirts in public, okay? So back to the bus scenario. I'm sitting right next to this fellow human being. So far, there's not a single reason why I should dislike this person. But I don't know why, if you put him and me on a bus next to each other, I want him as far away from me as possible. Just stop touching my shoulder! So that was the last time I took the bus. Unfortunately, that's not the only place you meet strangers. One time I was at Home Depot, and I was looking for jumper cables, and I couldn't find them anywhere. And I don't know if I'm the only human that's like this, but I will try everything in my power to not talk to a sales associate. I guess it's because I know they get paid minimum wage, and their life sucks, and I just want to leave them alone and not make their job any harder than it has to be. But asking employees for help isn't even bothering them that much. In fact, I think it's part of their job? Like, what's the worst thing they're gonna say? Ugh! You don't know where one specific item is? Everyone else knows. Did you even look? They're in the jumper cable aisle, idiot. No one's gonna think that. So feeling desperate, I mustered up what little courage I had and swaggered up to someone wearing an orange vest and said, excuse me, do you know where the jumper cables are? I don't work here. Oh, you don't work here? And then he walked away. And then he waddled away, waddle, waddle. And then the very next day, bum, bum, bum. So I think the logical thing to do in that situation would have been to find someone who does work there. But I left the store because I didn't want to run into that same guy again. But I also bought a hammer because I didn't want people to think that I stole something. So... oh, yeah. And by the way, if you wear an orange vest to Home Depot, just expect people to ask you for help. Same goes for people who wear red shirts at Target. You'd think I'd learn from my mistakes, but no, I have a bunch more examples. When my book came out, my publisher said that it was going to be carried at Barnes & Noble, and I thought that was super duper cool and wanted to see my book in the wild. Not to buy or anything, just to have a look at. So I took my friend Adam from Something Else YT, and we went to the local Barnes & Noble and started our search. We looked in the humor section, didn't find it. Then we checked the new release section, it wasn't there either. Then we looked at the best-selling section, then the religious section, but we couldn't find the book anywhere. So either the publisher lied, or they had already sold out. But just to be sure, I asked one of the workers, hey, do you guys have a book by The Odd Ones Out? He kind of looks like this. And the worker typed something out on his computer and said, oh yeah, we got those in the back, we just haven't put them out yet. So then he went to the back room, brought out a copy and handed it to me saying, here you go, kid. And I thought, well, frick. I can't just hand it back to the guy and say, oh no, that's okay. I didn't want to buy it. I just wanted to have a look at it. Do you know how inconvenient that would be? So the only less awkward option I could think of was to buy my own book. And you know what? I'd get a couple cents back from this purchase, so it wouldn't have been a total loss. But Adam, being the more sensible one, said,
dude, this is ridiculous. You have to come clean.
So then he went to the worker and said,
so he actually wrote this book? He just wanted to get a look at it, like, in the wild.
And the worker said, oh, that's so cool. Do you want to sign our copies? And then I thought, well, hold on. You're not even going to ask me for my ID? How do you know I actually wrote this book and I'm not some guy trying to deface someone else's? And then the guy gave me a whole stack of my books and I signed them all. Last story before I go. I was in the hallway of a building, and me and this potential friend crossed paths. He said, hello, and I was going to respond with, hello, and how's it going? But I combined the two and ended up saying, how? And then I jumped out a window and fell to my death. I can't rationalize that behavior. Maybe I spend too much time on the computer and I'm not used to looking at real people's faces, but I'm trying to change. Don't get me wrong, going to conventions and meeting fans has helped me a lot with talking to people. Granted, those conversations are usually one-sided and a real stranger won't already know who I am, but they've still helped me. Now, you might be expecting me to give you advice on overcoming social anxiety, but if you watch this video, you know I'm not the most qualified to give that advice, but I'll try my best. I know it's hard to feel confident, and I'm still working on it, but you have to understand that we're all people, and we all have things that we're struggling with. And in reality, we're not all watching or caring about every little thing that other people do. We're all too busy worrying about what other people think of us. So with enough practice and believing in yourself, you can show the world your true colors, and I think you'll find that people are a lot nicer than you think. So if you're the middle seat guy on the bus, and you have to decide whether or not to move, do whatever you want. No one cares. Just stop touching my shoulders.
So me and TJ had to sleep a whole night in the axe-smelling tent. Every breath I could taste the smell, and I just got more and more angry. The night finally passed, and I woke up early in the morning before everyone else, so I could start with my master revenge plan. Was I tired? Maybe, but that's the sacrifice you have to make for vengeance. Every campsite had a water fountain coming out of the ground, connected to a PVC pipe. I found the biggest Ziploc freezer bag I could find and started to fill it up with water. It was obviously a slow process. I had plenty of time to reconsider, to think about what TJ said or what would happen after I got my revenge. But nothing stopped me. I was a squeaky-voiced, hormone-induced monster. Once the bag was full, I went back to my tent and woke TJ up. He got up and I told him to watch this. TJ actually had no part in the revenge plan. I just wanted to suck him down with me. I think TJ actually didn't want to get revenge. I ran towards the mega log tent and hid behind a real tent that was right next to the log one. Everyone was still inside. TJ still had no clue what I was doing. Until I chucked the bag over the real tent. If everything went according to plan, the bag would break on the roof and the water would sink through the openings. And then they'd be super wet, LOL. That was the plan. I never saw the carnage my creation had done. I was worried that I'd completely miss the log tent. I never played any sports as a kid, so just making it over the first tent would have been an accomplishment. But the fact that everyone started screaming and one boy yelled, "Micah, I'm gonna kill you!" I knew it must have been the most perfect shot. Did I stay around and laugh at their stupid, guilty faces? No. Me and TJ ran away as fast as we possibly could, without looking back. We sprinted off into the woods before any 15-year-old saw us. We just kept running and running, making sure to get as far away from camp as possible. And on the way, I kinda threw up a little. TJ, being the good friend that he was, thought I was unfit to run, so he decided that we should hide in some bushes. After about 5 minutes, nobody came. "Should we head back to camp?" "No." "Yeah, you're right." So we kept running, until we found the lake where scouts could canoe in. Me and TJ both thought this was a good place to stop, so we sat by the lake and talked for a few hours. Because in a week, TJ and his family were going to move away to China for 2 years, and I knew I wouldn't see him again for a long time, so I wanted to spend every moment I had with him. We were just a couple of bros being real with each other, skipping rocks and talking about our feelings. And then that night, the 15-year-old's tent got axe-bombed. So I guess it wasn't them. Oh, and remember how I threw up after running so much? Well, apparently there was a sickness going around camp that all the camp instructors got, and about 50% of the scouts got it too. And lo and behold, one of the 15-year-olds wasn't feeling so well when he went to bed that night. And then the sudden jolt awake and the cold water made him throw up.
Yay!
Hi everyone, I'm here with Jaden Animations.
Hi.
Today we're going to be drawing Pokemon from memory.
And yay!
we're going to do one from each generation, and there's a time limit of 4 hours per picture, so.
Alright, so strap in, this is going to be a long video, everyone.
Alright, so your Gen 1 Pokemon that I chose for you, Omanyte, Lord Helix.
And yours is Meowth.
Meowth?
Yeah, we're starting off easy.
Yeah, this is level one. No reference picture, just art.
My biggest, fear right now is being like, oh yeah, I'm a Pokemon fan, and then, drawing everything wrong. Oh no, I feel like I should have studied for a test. I feel like I'm in school again.
Why is this so hard? He was, in every episode. Does he have a nose? I can't remember if he has a nose or not.
Lord Helix, I'm sorry.
Oh, crap. Oh, that's on the same layer. Oh, no. Maybe since he's, a villain, he should be you know?
He's, a bad villain. Not bad as an evil, but bad like as a bad villain. Actually bad.
When I'm going to be editing this, I'm just going to have, a picture of it, off to the side.
I really feel like I'm missing something, but I don't know what else to add.
I mean, it's just, a shell and then, something popping out of the shell, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm done.
Should we be giving any, drawing tips?
I always say practice.
That's true.
And people are like, Jaden, no, say something else. I'm like, I don't know what else to say. So you guys just have to practice.
Can't remember if Meowth has a nose. I'm looking at it with and without the nose. So, whatever. Okay, it's done. It's fine.
Lord Helix himself.
Aww. You actually did color it.
Aww.
You're pretty spot on. Yeah. Does he have a nose?
No.
He doesn't? I'm missing, a couple of, these. Whoops. And his eyeballs are like this, you know? Yeah. Okay.
All right, next one.
Next one. Your Gen 2 Pokemon is Houndoom. The grown-up of the Honduras? Is that the baby one?
Houndour and Houndoom.
Whatever, Pokemon Master.
And yours is Flaffy.
Flaffy?
Yeah, do you know which one that is?
Explain it.
Mareep, the sheep one.
Uh-huh.
The very first sheep?
Yeah, the pink
it's
one?
It's the second one.
Wait. So it's like a sheep. An electric sheep. And that's pink.
Yes.
I got it. A little sheep afro. Oh, I'm doing it on the same layer again. Let me just extend the canvas. Here, you know what? I need to restart, a lot of it.
I thought you were going to say, I need to research. I'm like, no. Hey!
The whole point of these. Is it weird that I actually sketch with a stabilizer? I think it has ears. Yeah, it totally has ears.
I know he has a skull on his chest. This looks like a seashell.
Something's off. I can't think of what, though. I know it has little, sheep fur somewhere else. I don't know.
I was just drawing Manectric yesterday, and this is the opposite. It's the fire doggo versus electric doggo.
Wait. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the thing I was drawing. I was like, wait, my thing's a doggo? I thought it was a sheep. Okay, I'm kind of done.
Are you done already?
I mean, are we ever really done?
When did we start? We should check the time every time we begin. Mine's not colored, and I think I'm missing some details, but I think it's as good as it's gonna get now.
Okay, well now I'm not done coloring it. There's totally something missing. Did I even get the color schemes right? Oh man. So this is what I drew.
Aww. It looks like cotton candy.
Yeah. That's aww, adorable. Yours is... that's really good. It's wearing kind of a turtleneck skeleton.
You put the fluff on the wrong side of the
belly. Oh, you're right.
All right. Next one.
Next one.
Yours is Absol.
Absol? That's the white little wolf thing, right? Yours is Flygon.
Flygon?
Yeah. Is that too easy or is that too hard? That's too hard.
Which Pokemon did you, stop playing the games at?
The third one, Ruby and Emerald. I was caught up with all the hot new trends up until the fifth one. When I was choosing your, sixth generation one, there were some that I was not recognizing.
Uh-oh, what if I chose that one? Then you're in trouble. People are gonna be like, ah, how do you not know who this looks like? It's easier when you watch someone do it, okay, guys?
Aw, man.
I got the ones that were aesthetically pleasing to me.
You mean the ones that were cute? Is that how you say it?
I was never, like, into the cute Pokemon. I was, like, the really cool ones that were, like, powerful and stuff.
I have not gotten that far into the drawing, so if we, like, cut to you and you're, like, almost done, that'd be embarrassing.
Do insects here? They have to.
Do they?
Is that a stupid question?
You got a nice little profile shot of whatever the heck this is. Oh, I'm so glad we're not recording this and putting it on the internet. I think this is my worst one. Have you seen the new Ghostbusters movie?
No, I heard it sucks.
Oh, I haven't seen it either, so. If I had time to do line art, this would look so much better. I started doing the line art, but I shouldn't have. Okay, I'm gonna give you a secret. I haven't even seen the original Ghostbusters movie.
What?
Right? Yeah, I know. I wonder if I see this new one, since I don't have anything else to, like, judge it off of. I wonder if I'll think it's better. I shouldn't color. I shouldn't.
I heard all your undos.
Just pretend I colored in the rest of the claws. Here's what I drew. It's, oh man. Don't even give a pity. Aww. Oh wow, yours is good.
Aww.
Yours is, like, really spot on. Yeah, no, I was way off with my Absol.
If Absol had a pre-evolution, that would be it.
And it doesn't even have ears. I'm excited for this one, just because I want to see what you do. All right, yours is Licky Licky.
Oh, no. Yours is Floatzel.
Is that the one Ash had in the cartoon? And it's like a water one?
Yeah, he had a Buizel, which is the first one. And then it's the next one.
I don't know what that looks like.
Floatzel. Like float, and then Zell, as in pretzel. Imagine an otter, but bigger, and he's got, like, floaties on him.
This is so far not turning out that good.
Do you think they make Pokemon ugly on purpose?
No.
Do you know Probopass?
No. Is that, like, one of the new ones?
It's like a rock one with a really big nose and a mustache.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really ugly, and a lot of people don't like it.
I know a lot of people don't like the, like Garbodor? No, that's the sexy one that everyone likes. The garbage
one.
No,
I think it was Garbodor.
Oh. What's the sexy one that everyone likes?
What were you talking about?
I'm talking about the trash one.
I've played all of them except for Black and White 2. That was when I had my falling out. I was like, yeah. But then I came back to it.
Shoot, this is looking like a kangaroo. I kept thinking, like, there's something up here on the forehead. But I didn't know what. And you're like, you know what? I think it would look better with this. Do you think food tastes better when you didn't make it?
Yes. Isn't it like you aren't used to the smell while you're cooking? I saw another thing where, like, people would have two glasses of milk and one was dyed orange.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, this milk tastes better, but it was the same one.
There's got to be some way we can turn this into a competition.
Didn't, like, a whole bunch of different stuff happen with Minecraft? Now there's, like, a story now.
Oh, yeah, there's like, an end. You do it, and then, like, you can still play. I know it has the floaties. Now I'm just, like, seriously just, like, adding designs.
I'm pretty much done.
The tail always has some design on it. This is what I drew.
And this is what I drew. Ah, you keep drawing them all really cute.
Are you sure? I mean, whatever, okay. I didn't think you'd get this, but Licky Licky has a Wi-Fi symbol on him. Man, there was a lot I was missing. I knew there was something on his forehead. He doesn't have ears. Yours is Rufflet.
Oh, no.
It's a bird one. It's like a bald eagle. It's like a baby bald eagle.
Oh, okay. That helped me a lot. I was about to draw the wrong gen bird. So you have to draw Crocodile.
Wait, is that the first one or the second one?
It's the third.
What?
Do you still know which one I'm talking about?
It's a crocodile.
Yeah.
And it has...
And it's red.
And it's red. And he's in the third one, he's standing up with his arms crossed. Or am I thinking, is the second one the one with cross arms?
Little fun fact. My first games were Ruby and Sapphire.
Uh-huh.
And my first Pokemon ever was Torchic, and that's why Torchic and Blaziken are my favorite.
Uh-huh.
In the sprite, Torchic has 1 foot up, kind of standing up. I always thought he only had 1 foot, and then he evolved, and he's like, oh, I have a foot now. I have both of them.
I always, you know, Rattatat? I always put in, like, one too many Atatas. Rat-a-tat-a-tat. Okay, I'm starting over. I know its eyes are, like, bulging. That's all I can think of.
Kind of. There's, like, a part that bulges out, but it's not his eyes.
What? I can't. I can't. Jaden, I can't. I'm just gonna draw a crocodile.
I can see the image
right
in my head.
Same.
But I just can't.
But I tried to draw that twice and I've given up.
How close are you to being done?
I mean, I can call it quits. It's so not a Pokemon. You're gonna look at it and be like, that's just a crocodile.
This is a weak round. It is a crocodile.
Yours is Inke.
Inke?
Am I saying that right?
Yours is Noivern.
What is that one? Oh, is it the bat one? That new bat one?
Yeah, and he's got like the ears.
Oh, he does have ears. The one that I saw that I like, I've never seen that before. It was hands coming out of a rock. Like if you held that one up and like a Digimon and you said, which one's the Pokemon? I'd be like, neither of them are Pokemon. This is not right, but I don't care. I'm making it cute.
I wonder how many people are going to dislike this just because we frustrated them.
Like, I'm not taking it seriously anymore. This is why you need drawing references.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with drawing references. I saw a comment one time, and it was like, Jaden, you use references to draw your Pokemon. I'm like,
yeah.
What else? Why are you mad at me? Oh, this is going pretty well. And then I just, like, stopped and looked at it, and I'm like, oh, this doesn't look right.
I'm not making it look cool. I'm making it look derpy. All right, and then it totally has little bat wings. Throw designs on the wall, see what sticks.
This poor thing.
Perfect. I'm done. All right, this is what I drew.
This is what I drew.
Aw.
Aw! Every time I see him, it's just adorable.
Thanks. Okay, the nose is not right. And man, his wings are a lot crazier than I thought.
You got the, like, the V on his face.
So these were my Pokemon. This one's not really a Pokemon. That one didn't count. What have we learned, Jaden?
Reference photos are important.
Thanks for watching. Yeah, if you haven't seen Jaden's video, you should.
Please.
I don't know if you could tell, but we kind of did a collab.
Bye.
Bye. Wear your seatbelt.
Now, you might think that since I'm making a part two of this, I must get recognized a whole lot, like I'm some sort of celebrity or something. No, 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 no. What actually happens is that I'm awkward, and I don't want to speak for everyone, but chances are you're awkward too. So when I do get recognized, we're both being awkward, together. And that stuff makes for great videos. Once you get to my level of YouTube fame, whenever I go out in public, I always have a thought in the back of my mind, I wonder if any of these people have seen me pour sprinkles over my shirtless body. I especially get worried when I see my target demographic in public. Little boys. This might be paranoia or anxiety, but I swear, sometimes little boys will stare at me for an uncomfortable amount of time. And I'm just trying my best not to make eye contact. You know, I don't really have any defining physical characteristics that make me stand out. As of right now, little boys have to look at me and think, is that tall, white, dirty, blonde-haired, early 20-year-old beta male that one YouTuber I like, or am I just imagining things? It's funny I call myself the odd ones out when I'm part of, like, no minorities. I mean, I might get nervous around little boys, but when I do get recognized, it's the highlight of my day. So I don't know what I'm worried about. I should just wear a shirt that says, hey! And the odd one's out. So one time I went to Walmart and I was buying a bunch of whoopee cushions for my April Fool's video. And as I was walking down the aisle, I saw this little boy at the other end walking towards me and his face just lit up. And I thought, oh, this kid knows! This is happening, ladies and gentlemen! Here we go! Are you James? Who? And then I walked off. I'm just kidding. I mean, I did say who, but I didn't walk away. I was just messing with the kid. It was probably really weird for that kid to see a YouTuber in Walmart buying nothing but whoopee cushions. So that was fun. This other time, I was buying supplies for my 3 million sprinkle video, and I ended up going to 3 different stores. Hey, do you guys have an inflatable pool? Yeah, what size do you need? Enough to fit 3 million sprinkles. What are you using it for? I need it for a thing. So after I finished my important business errands, I felt a little hungry, so I decided to buy some pre-made food. I work hard, dang it, I deserve it. And I decided to go eat at Zupa's. Zupa's is a pretty good restaurant. They have sandwiches and soup, and they give you a chocolate-covered strawberry with every order. I'm telling you this because I want them to sponsor me. I went up to the counter, and there was this employee that said, hey man, what's up? And this is gonna be a bit of a tangent, but I just wanna say that I absolutely love that kind of employee. It's so much better than those fake fast food employees. Do you know the ones I'm talking about? Like, every time I pull up into a Chick-fil-A drive-thru, there'll be an employee that will say, it's always a great day at Chick-fil-A. My name's Mackenzie. How may I serve you? And I just want to say, Mackenzie, 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 Mackenzie. I came here yesterday and Brian said the exact same thing. I know your manager told you to say that. Look, neither of us want to be here, okay? No one says it's a great day at Chick-fil-A, okay? That's so dumb. So stop lying to me and give me the usual. Like, I would much rather have a fast food employee just say,
What do you want?
Okay, maybe not that rude, but you get the point. So now there's a random guy who works at Zupa's who doesn't even know I put him in a YouTube video, but I like his work ethic. Treat me like a person and not like a customer. Anyway, tangent over, I ordered some soup and a sandwich. Cool. I go up to the cash register. My soup is ready, but my sandwich wasn't. The girl said, "Did you get anything else or just soup?" I said, "No, I got a sandwich too." I paid for the food, but the sandwich still wasn't ready. I checked my phone, looked at Twitter. By now, the sandwich was done. The girl took the sandwich and the soup and a chocolate-covered strawberry and put it in a plastic box doggy bag thing. I was super hungry. I thought the transaction was done, so I grabbed the box and started sliding it towards me. Then she took out a plastic bag and said, "Oh, do you want it in a bag?" And I thought, "Yeah, I do." So I slid the food back over, and as this girl was putting the food in the bag, she yelled,
"James!"
And I was not ready for that.
"Oh, hey, I mean, who?"
She said, "Did you come here because of my email?"
"You sent an email?"
So that was pretty fun. All the other employees were like, "Wait, this guy's important? There's a high chance that this woman is watching this video right now, and I looked up her email, and her name is Scarlett. Isn't that a nice name? So Scarlett, if you're watching, can you tell your coworker I like his work ethic? Also, can you hook me up with free Zupas?" I never really understood how people could get nervous talking to me. I'm just some 21-year-old who likes M&Ms and drawing cartoons for the internet. I've always thought of myself as a pretty normal guy. At least, I never understood that sort of nervousness until I met Carl Sagan 42. I recently got into this game called Mario Maker, which is a game where you can make your own Mario levels and share them with the world via the internet. I wanted to find some Mario Maker Let's Players that were, one, good at the game, and two, weren't screaming every 10 seconds, which is actually a lot harder to find than you might think. But I went searching and I found these three Let's Players who mostly play Mario Maker, and they're alright at the game. I mean, they're only a little better than me. If one of my videos gets delayed, you could probably thank these three because I'm watching their videos instead of working. Also, this is gonna sound weird, but every morning after I wake up at 12, I pour myself a bowl of cereal and I watch one of their videos. So I start my day off with my Mario Maker boys. Anyway, one of the Let's Players, Carl Sagan 42,
Mushroom,
was going to Phoenix Comic Con, which was great because I was also going to Phoenix Comic Con. I didn't have a panel or anything, I just went with Jaden and her friends and we just walked around. Comic-Con was a lot of fun. I met up with a lot of people. I even got recognized at Suaboy. One of the workers knew me. There is this room where you could play video games, and I went up to this one kid playing Super Smash Brothers, and I said, "All right, dude, let's do this." And he said, "I feel like I know you from somewhere." Huh, okay. And then I totally wiped the floor with him with Kirby, and he was like 12 years old. So I had a fun time at the con, but I also wanted to meet Carl. Now, Carl wasn't going to the con because of his Mario Maker skills, but rather he was going because he's actually a scientist who studies vaccines and plants, and he was going to talk about that. So on Friday, after doing some stalking on Twitter, I found out that he had a panel at 9 p.m. Yes! Leading up to the panel, I realized that I was getting my information off a tweet and not from the official Comic-Con handbook, so I didn't even know if I was going to the correct panel. When 9 p.m. rolled around, I walked into the room Carl said he was having his panel. I saw a group of 5 people sitting on a stage, but I didn't see Carl. Guess he's not here. Oh wait, he is here! He's just the only person in cosplay! That's the guy I like! The one in the wig! As I listened to his panel, I kept telling myself that Carl was just a normal person like me. He plays Mario, I make cartoons, I shouldn't be nervous to talk to him. Why am I like this? The panel was great, everyone enjoyed it except for this one woman who I think was anti-vaccine. Once it was done, the panelists stayed around for a couple of minutes and I went up to Carl and I said, "Hey, I really like your Mario Maker streams." And since he talked about vaccines, I showed him this comic I made back in 2014, which I will read now. "Hey folks, are you tired of hearing this? Can you believe all the horrible things doctors put in vaccines? There's no way I'm vaccinating my child. Well, suffer no longer with the anti-anti-vaccine. The anti-anti-vaccine will stop anyone from thinking vaccines are harmful or cause autism." And then he injects the anti-anti-vaccine into the person, and then he flops over. "Is he okay? No, he's dead. Vaccinate your relatives today." It's dark, yes, but Carl liked it, and he even said that AAV is a name of a virus, so vaccine is actually a virus. Well, actually, vaccines are viruses, so. The anti-vaccine lady was behind me, and I think she wanted to talk to Carl, so I said, "Okay, I love you, bye," and I left Carl to deal with her. Some of you might be wondering why I didn't say, "Oh, also Carl, by the way, I have 3 million subscribers on YouTube." Well, because I think that's rude. And I didn't want to flex too hard. I mean, if he did ask about my sub count, I totally would have told him, but I don't know, I just didn't want to brag. I tell you this story because I understand that people might get anxiety talking to someone they look up to. And just because I have more subs than someone doesn't mean I won't get nervous talking to them. Senpais can have senpais too. I wonder who Carl's senpai is. Then 2 days later, I tweeted out to him and he followed me back and we're BFFs now. Now guys, don't embarrass me in front of Carl, okay? Don't just go to his channel and comment, "Who's here because of the odd ones out?" Because no one cares, alright? If you have to comment, comment, "Wow, great video, Carl. You're an awesome person when it comes to Mario. You just jumped right into my heart." And also, you can check out the other two that I mentioned. They're pretty good, too. So, in conclusion, is it cool to be recognized? Yeah. Will I ever get tired of it? Who knows?
This brick is alive. Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip!
That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Brickathy's gonna do a backflip, Grandma!
Are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the animate ore. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called... You're filming something and then stop the camera and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times. On the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything. But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day, and while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, because, like, where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Oh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and is absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere,
and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy. They'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply. Basically, we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there. Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything. Even in stop motion, we can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Laika's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. Turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy. They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize. And that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brains start setting off alarm bells and go, ugh, something is definitely wrong with that almost human. I am entering fight or flight right now. So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped. And the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime. Anime? They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings...
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then, by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected. But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kinda like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime. Nani? By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over the top, it was trying to be real and gritty. Animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced achievements, like putting a guy on the moon and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand-paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is going to be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh. We still don't have the processing power to render everything out. Oh, I know. We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this. A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame. This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look... you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape, like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame. I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called CAPS. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist. Which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best goddamn lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations. But no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons. But they soon discovered a unique problem. The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever work around this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. a little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions. But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell. You remember Robin, they only drew one body and five different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into two or three different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like four, or five, or 173! Have you ever played around with the free and revolutionary animation software Pivot Stick Figure Animator? If you're the type of person that says, "Oh, I suck at drawing. I can't even draw stick figures," then you're gonna love this program. On Pivot, you're given a pre-made stick figure or horse that have these joints that can be posed however you like. Each of these stick figure's limbs are just individual pieces that are connected in such a way that make it look like a stick figure. So to make these animations, we're not really drawing anything, we're just manually posing out a character like a digital puppeteer. I wasn't saying you can make a rig out of 173 pieces just to be funny, because that's how many pieces I'm made out of. That's right, me! Even I'm a rig! And can I tell you a secret? Most TV shows use rigs too. Of course, hand-drawn traditional animation is still used to make these shows. It's not a lost art form or anything. But rigs are super useful at making still pretty high-quality levels of animation, but at a much cheaper cost. And as we all know, TV animation has to create more animation per budget. But maybe rig animation still isn't as cost-effective as you'd like. And maybe you're not a fan of the complicated puppet look, and you want something that looks more human. Well, there's one more animation process we can try, called motion. An actor inside one of these dorky ping-pong suits, a computer can pinpoint and record that actor's exact movements. Now we can take those movements, slap a cartoon character's model over it, and we get an animation that looks like shit. Motion capture is the rotoscoping of 3D animation. It cuts costs, but the results are too human, and we're back at the bottom of the uncanny valley. That's why the kids from the Polar Express look so nightmarish, because they are following the exact movements of Tom Hanks. Yes, Tom Hanks, the adult man, did some motion capture for the small, nameless hero boy from the Polar Express. There's probably a reason we haven't made a fully motion capture cartoon in over 10 years. Because it looks weird. But I mean, that didn't stop one of these movies from winning an Oscar in animation. And before you ask, no, it wasn't Monster House or Tintin. It was Mars Needs Moms, duh. Just like rotoscoping, motion capture can be used correctly. Computer-generated characters acting side-by-side real human actors look decent. It's not that jarring that these creatures who exist in a live-action world are moving just like live-action people. And let's not forget all the VTubers who use motion capture technology to bring their jiggly assets to life. No matter what method someone uses to try and convince you that something else is alive, I think is incredibly cool, and I hope you think it's cool too. But maybe you don't think it's cool, and you don't care about animation, and you just put this video on in the background while you were cleaning. That's totally fine, I do that all the time. I just like learning about how all of my favorite animated pieces of media get created, because it's not always the same process. And I think it's great that new technology is allowing anyone to express themselves in whatever way possible. A person expressing themselves. Those are the three key words here. From the big studios that are just now pioneering new and interesting styles with digital animation, to the indie studios that have access to incredible technology which allow anyone working from their bedrooms in their pajamas to create some truly masterpieces of animation. So, if you're the type of person that likes to trick people into thinking that something is alive, then you deserve all the respect in the world. In fact, here are some cool people that made the animation in this video possible.
Hello, you just made it to the end of this video. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out this VTuber model, so I'm over-enunciating my words. The technology behind this is beyond my comprehension. If you're still deciding what to get for the holidays, then great news. We have mystery boxes over on my website, so you can leave the deciding up to us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go take a nap. Are you still watching? Oh yeah, she's coming back.
I'm sort of stealing this idea from Jaden Animations.
Wait, no, that's not right. I'm not stealing it. I'm plagiarizing it.
Jaden did a video talking about random thoughts she had and you should all go watch it, and I thought, hey, I think randomly sometimes. So Jaden, is it alright if I make a video about my random thoughts? I hope you say yes because I just did. What is happiness? Well, it's a chemical in your brain. And how do you get that chemical? Well, it's just a little something I like to call drugs. I think humans make fun of hairless animals way too much. We think that all hairless animals are ugly. Just go to Google Images and type in hairless animal, and you'll probably think the animals you see there are ugly as well. But we all seem to forget that we're hairless animals too. If anything, other animals should think that we're ugly. So I look at this phenomenon and I have a theory. I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry. My dad never taught me how to shave, and one time I cut myself shaving right above my lip, and for the rest of the day, all I could smell was blood. I don't know why I mentioned the dad part. You know how websites will ask you to type in a bunch of misshapen letters to make sure you're not a robot? That's called a CAPTCHA. And some of those CAPTCHAs are impossible. Sometimes I look at a CAPTCHA and think, am I a robot? I just wanted to send some email. I didn't want to question my identity. I wasn't ready for an existential crisis, Club Penguin. Sorry, that joke is dead. Just like Club Penguin. So here's the random thought. What if we lived in a robot society and robots had to prove that they weren't human to make a Facebook account? I think their CAPTCHA would be an optical illusion. Like to sign into a website, it'll show two lines and say, prove you're not a human, which line is bigger? Optical illusions are like CAPTCHAs for people. Every time you paint a room, it gets a little bit smaller. And if it takes you one can of paint to paint an entire room, then the room gets smaller by one can of paint. You brought a can of paint inside the room, and you never took it out. Every time you smell something, molecules from that thing get sucked up into your nose, and that's how you're able to smell it. So that means every time you smell something, it gets a tiny bit lighter. Do archaeologists have lingo and jokes that only other archaeologists will understand? Like, there's a whole other world of jokes that I won't get to experience because I'm not an archaeologist. Like, one day, two archaeologists could be digging a hole, and one says, I'm not finding anything! And then the other guy says, well, you know what they say in the archaeology business. And I don't know what they say because I'm not an archaeologist. How about we look up jokes for archaeologists? Why did Robin Hood pull out of the archery contest? He found it an arrowing experience. Okay, get that one? It just wasn't that funny. Nor was it about archaeology. Or maybe it was, and I just don't get it. We'll never know. Where did Caesar keep his armies? Up his sleeveys. Okay, I had to get this one explained to me, but armies is supposed to be your arm, like your body arm, and your armies go up your sleeveys. Get it? Except Julius Caesar wore a toga, so he didn't even have sleeves. And you could just say this about anyone who had an army. Where did Hitler keep his armies? Up his sleeveys! Ha 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 ha! When you ask someone what time it is, sometimes they'll say, it's a quarter to blank. And first off, I really hate that way of telling time, because now I have to use math just to know what time it is. Someone will say, it's a quarter to eight. Okay, so a quarter to eight, well, a quarter is 25, so 8 minus 25, it's like negative 13. Wait, no, we're using time numbers, so a quarter of 60, that's like 10 minutes, so 8 minus 60 over 4, you carry the 2, and oh, it's 8 o'clock now. We usually only say it's a quarter to when referring to whole numbers, but I wish people would use other times, like, hey, what time is it? Oh, it's a quarter to 8:37. Did you know that mosquitoes prefer type O blood more than any other blood type? Does that mean our blood tastes different? How can mosquitoes sense what blood type we are? Do mosquitoes think we come in different flavors? What if there was a restaurant for mosquitoes and the menus just had our blood types? Are there mosquito snobs? Like one mosquito would say, oh, I see you're drinking O negative.
Of course you'd like that blood. Everyone likes that blood. I got that whole idea from a conversation I had with Jaden, and I said I was going to use it in my Random Thoughts video, so I'm just stealing everything from Jaden.
You know what I think would be a funny contradiction? A fedora with a Tumblr logo on it.
Whenever you leave for a trip, people will say, drive safe, which is fine. I always appreciate safe driving tips, but when you go flying in an airplane, sometimes people will say, have a safe flight. But I literally have no control if the plane flies safely or not. Why are you telling me to fly safe? I should be the one telling the pilot that.
Hey, I just wanted to say that a lot of my friends are counting on you, so you better not screw this up.
I appreciate the sentiment, but how do I fly unsafe? Maybe go on my phone before we take off? Not watch the safety video? Blow the plane up? Why do people care so much about fashion? If I bought some really nice clothes and I go to a party, out of everyone in that room, I'm the only one who can't see what I'm wearing, unless I look down the entire time. I can go to a party and be wearing just a bunch of clown makeup, and as long as there's no mirrors around and everyone plays it cool, I would have no idea that I'm wearing anything. And also, it doesn't matter what I'm wearing, because I look good in everything. I think this whole YouTube thing has given me a confidence boost. I wouldn't say it's an unhealthy amount, but it's given me confidence that I didn't have in high school. My parents bought me a Pokemon shirt for Christmas, and yeah, I like Pokemon, but I don't want the whole world to know that. And in high school, I wouldn't have worn any remotely geeky shirt. But now I can go outside and not even realize that I'm wearing my Pokemon shirt. And when I do realize, I usually think, huh, that's embarrassing. I'm the odd ones out, who cares? When my parents were my age, they already had a child. And here I am, wearing a Pokemon shirt. You know how different states in America will have different names for certain things? Like some states call it pop instead of soda, or how they call it a washroom instead of a bathroom, and apparently in Rhode Island they call a water fountain a bubbler, and everywhere else is just normal. Anyway, once I heard that down south, there's a phrase for when it's raining and the sun is still out. And that phrase is, the devil meeting his wife. Oh, isn't that so sweet? That means anyone can find happiness, even the devil. Ah, I love it when we give the devil more innocent and human characteristics. And given how few of times it rains in Arizona, I don't get to use that phrase very often. So already when it's raining, it's like, woo, it's raining, this day is gonna be great! But then when the sun's out, I get to say, look guys, the devil's meeting his wife! Ah, I hope they're happy together. Unfortunately, I misheard what that phrase was when I learned it. It's not the devil meeting his wife. It's actually the devil beating his wife. So I guess they're not happy together. I was so sad when I learned what it actually was. I don't know who this devil's wife is, but you need to find a new man, dude. And to think, I almost thought of you as an alright guy, Satan. I looked up that saying on Wikipedia, and in Tennessee they say, the devil is kissing his wife. So I guess in Tennessee, the devil's romantic, but everywhere else he just can't stand her. And the worst variation I could find has to be what they say in France. In France, when it rains and the sun's out, they say, the devil is beating his wife and marrying his daughter. Whoa, France! I'd expect that sort of behavior from Tennessee, but not you, France! Why do you have to be so dramatic to describe your weather? I don't want to even know what you call snowstorms. So anyway, those were my random thoughts. I swear I don't do drugs.
Mr. James, on Saturday morning at 10:03 a.m., you were observed coloring a picture of a dinosaur. Is that true?
Yeah. Can we go to recess?
Even though your mom had repeatedly asked you to clean up your toys, you disobeyed her and colored anyway?
I plead the fifth.
Your Honor, I have no further questions. James, I hereby sentence you to 15 minutes in the timeout corner.
I'm not going back to timeout!
I'm no scientist, but I think moms play a very important role in society. Without moms, who would drive us to soccer practice? Who else would tell us that it's not okay to eat cupcakes for breakfast? And who else would point at construction workers and say, that's why you need to get a college education, James? Oh, and I guess they also give birth to you and take care of you, but like, pfft, anyone could do that. Now, before I talk about how I was raised, I just want to give out this disclaimer that my mom is a great mom. She loves me. At least, she used to. If you asked me when I was 15 if my mom was a good mom, 15-year-old me would have said, no. Okay, but like, when I was little, I'd be talking with my friends, and we would be talking about our parents, and they would say stuff like, yeah, my mom lets me stay up till midnight, and she lets me play really graphic and vulgar video games. Yeah, my mom doesn't care if I wear clothes with skulls on them, and she lets me eat an entire tub of ice cream for dinner. My mom lets me play with knives. And I used to think that their moms were so much cooler for letting my friends have that much fun. But now, as an adult, I realize the sad truth, that these kids' moms weren't cooler.
They just cared about them less. I'm not saying every mom out there is perfect, but a mom who takes the time to make a responsible member of society is pretty high up on the good mom list. Anyways, I love you, Mom, and now I'll immortalize and monetize some of that love. When I was younger and still in need of adult supervision, my mom would take me and my twin sister out to run errands with her. And, as you would expect, we were rowdy and wanted to do our own thing. But my mom was prepared for this. She would bring two plastic baggies filled with 10 M&Ms, and every time my sister or I misbehaved, she would eat an M&M right in front of us. And she made sure we saw her eat our M&Ms. She didn't give us a warning, either. If we did anything remotely bad, she would say, "Hey, hey, look at me." And I think that parenting technique is the psychological reason that M&Ms are my favorite candy bar.
I'm a good boy. I'm a good boy.
Something me and my sister really liked doing was hiding in those circular racks of clothes that they have set up in department stores. Being in the middle of one of those racks is such a surreal experience. I totally recommend it. But my mom didn't like it when we had fun, so she had to reach her arm in and try and grab us. Do you need any help? Oh, no, I'm just trying to get something in the back. There's a really nice belt that would be great for spanking my misbehaving children! I was spanked as a kid. Nothing too bad. I probably deserved it anyway. I don't remember any specific actions I did that earned a spanking, but I do remember outrunning my mom a lot. Another thing my mom did when I was very little was sometimes when she was washing her hands, she would turn to me and go, "Achoo!" and flick water in my face. It really bothered me, but I never spoke out about it. And one day I just couldn't handle it anymore and I started crying. Why are you crying? But I was too sad to articulate how I was really feeling. If you ask her about this today, she'll say that she doesn't remember doing that sneeze gag ever, but I remember it. Vividly. So to get back at her, I put a rubber band around the dish sprayer, so when you turn on the sink, it would spray water at you. Come to think of it, I do remember one reason I was spanked. Every time one of my siblings insulted another sibling or told them to shut up, we would have to pay them 50 cents. This resulted in a really weird dynamic when it came to insults. We would get excited when someone called us a name.
Mom, Luke called me a butthole!
That's 50 cents!
Woo! I'm rich!
But sometimes, us kids would just be messing around with each other and we didn't really mean the insults. So we would feel bad taking someone else's 50 cents. Like someone would say, "Hey, James, what's 6 plus 6? And I would say, 9, idiot. And my mom would hear me and say, "James, that's 50 cents. And my sister would feel bad, so she would insult me back and say, "James, you're an unpleasant person." Aw. Swear words cost you $5. That's why I don't swear in videos. But now I can afford it. So, f*** you, Mom. You piece of swear. My mom never washed her mouths out with soap, she wasn't that kind of person, but she did threaten to if we swore. And one time after I said a pretty naughty word, penis, she said, "If you don't behave, I'm going to get the soap." And I said, "I don't care, soap tastes good." "All right, you big dingus, shove this in your mouth, you won't do it, no balls." So I bit into it and immediately regretted it. Now people are eating soap for views. So I guess we never grow up. Did anyone else's parents put a password on the family computer? Because my parents did, and I didn't know we were the only family that did that. We had a rule in the house that we were only allowed to be on the family computer for however long we read a book for. But luckily, I would just read a book for 15 minutes, get my mom to type in the password, and then she would just forget that I was on the computer and let me stay on for hours. And I played a lot of Neopets and RuneScape. Also, I wasn't allowed to have a TV or a computer in my room, because then I would have easy access to inappropriate animes. When I was little, cell phones were a thing, but my mom didn't let me have one, so I had to talk to all my friends over a landline. I hope I don't have to explain what that is, because that would make me feel really old, and I'm supposed to be in the prime of my life. But basically it meant if I was upstairs in my room talking to a friend, my mom could grab a phone downstairs in the kitchen and just join in our conversation completely uninvited. It didn't matter who I was talking to, I'd be having a conversation like this. I think the reason I internalize and hide away all my problems is because of how invasive my mom is in my personal life.
James, get off the phone and do the dishes.
Mom, I'm on the phone!
Wow, I can't believe you said that to the person who gave birth to you. So what are you two losers talking about?
Luckily, I would almost never be talking to a girl. So at least that didn't happen. This other time, my mom was giving me and my sister a ride to school, and on the radio, she was listening to the worst subgenre of rock music. Christian rock?
Just kidding, you can like whatever you want.
Anyway, we were pulling up to the school, and I told my mom to turn the music down. What? Why?
because I don't want people to think I listen to this, Mom. You see, I was in junior high, so I cared a lot about what other people cared about. So she turned the music down, but as we stepped out of the car, she turned the volume all the way back up and blasted the music for everyone to hear. Looking back at the situation, I think that's pretty hilarious. GG, Mom. These aren't all the times my mom embarrassed me, but those are all the ones I'm going to include in this video. I didn't even mention the time when I was 4 when my twin sister wanted to do ballet lessons, but she didn't want to do them alone, so my mom signed me up for lessons too. But that's a story for another video. Love you, Mom. You made me like this. Everyone, shut up and look at this video! I love the internet. Gabe the dog is a rescue. Aw. Side question. Do you think Arthur Schwallow, Nobel Prize winner and inventor of the laser in 1957, would enjoy playing a round of laser tag, something that he invented? Someone should tweet to him and see if we can get him to play laser tag. Oh wait, he's dead. He'd be 95 years old if he was still alive. Jose, can you see? Well, he's playing laser tag in the stars now. What if that's what shooting stars are? Okay, here's a story sort of relating to the side question. So one time, me and this group of friends went to a laser tag place. Arena? For someone's birthday party. I forgot how old we were, but we were around 15 years old. So not that old, but old enough to think we were old. I don't know if any of you guys have been to a laser tag place, but when you get there, you usually have to wait for the game inside to finish up before you can go and play. So the laser tag place has these arcade games for you to play while you're waiting. So me and my friends were playing games, and this group of 4 guys wearing all black come in. I'm talking black long-sleeve shirts, black pants, they had black freaking gloves on. 3 of them were wearing some sort of black hat, and the other guy who wasn't already had black hair. They looked about 18, maybe 19 years old. So, my first thought was, ha, look at these goths, what dweebs, pfft. But then, I remembered that the laser tag arena was darkly lit. These guys weren't goths, they were wearing camouflage. Part of me was thinking, wow, these guys came prepared. But the other part of me was thinking, wow, these guys are even bigger dweebs. They came prepared to a laser tag fight. I don't know what these guys' names were, but for the sake of this video, we're going to call them all Hunter. Not because they have guns and they hunt people, but because I think only people with the name Hunter would do this. I don't know why I'm biased against the name Hunter, it's just one of those names. If someone named Hunter is watching, I'm not sorry. Before you go in and play laser tag, you all sit in this room and some employee tells you the rules of the game, and then at the end they make you repeat the rules to them. So they say, I will not run, jump, or climb. And then you say, I will not run, jump, or climb. But I remember while we were chanting the rules, the 4 guys were just staring off and not repeating anything. Guys, I think these 4 are planning on running, jumping, and or climbing. So we all start playing the game. This was the type of laser tag that you gotta make up a name for yourself, and it would tell you who shot who. And there were 3 teams. There was the red team, the yellow team, and either the blue or green team. I forgot the colors, it's not important. So, while we were playing, we were having fun like any person playing laser tag would, and then I run into this group of people who are wearing strobe lights. I couldn't see their faces or anything in that direction really, but I knew immediately who it was. Do you want to take a wild freaking guess who?
It was the Hunter!
It was the Hunters! So I got hit many times by them, and then I broke one of the rules. I ran away like anyone should when getting hit by light amplification by simulated emissions of radiation. I found one of my friends, and I said, did you see the guys with the strobe lights? And he said, yeah. And they gave me this scar! And he had a 12-inch scar on his face, and I'm just kidding, that didn't happen, it was lasers. So later in the game, I got to one of the high towers to get a good vantage point. I'm about to straight up snipe one of these dweebs! I waited for about 10 seconds when I saw a flashing light, followed by darkness, followed by another flashing light very quickly in the distance. And I just started spamming the trigger. I couldn't see any of their flashing lights that you're supposed to hit, so I was just aiming at a glowing ball. And then, I hit one of them. And I knew immediately it was them because... Remember how we got to name ourselves? Well, no one really took that seriously. We all came up with joke names like Butt Fart or Big Wiener or Shooty McShootface. I'm just kidding on that last one, that meme didn't exist back then. But the name that I chose was, are you ready for this? A Girl. Let me explain. When you got shot with a laser, it would say who shot you. So whenever I shot someone, it would say, a girl shot you. I mean, sure, it's sexist, but I thought it was the pinnacle of my comedy career. So, I don't know if any of you guys have been in this situation, but let me tell you, it is very hard to keep a straight face when halfway across the laser tag arena, an almost adult man screams with 100% seriousness,
I'm gonna kill you, girl! That's how I knew I hit someone. It's when Hunter screamed that. So everything was pretty normal after that. I finished playing the game, and then when the game was over, I see the hunters holding a wad of black electrical tape in their hands. I'm not saying they put black tape over their sensors so you couldn't see them, but they totally put black tape over their sensors so you couldn't see them! Luckily though, their team didn't win, so ha! I mean, neither did my team, but it's not important. But I mean, screw those guys! Can you imagine them in the car driving to the laser tag place? Hunter's driving and he looks over and says, Hunter, did you bring the strobe lights? Yeah, Hunter, I brought them. Hunter, you brought the tape, right? Yeah, it's right here, Hunter. Hey, Hunter, where's your hat? Hunter said he was going to bring me one. Oh, sorry, Hunter, I forgot. Here, Hunter, take my hat. My hair's already black. Thanks, Hunter, you're the best. Yeah, Hunter sucks. If your name was Hunter, you probably suck, too.
Quick, what do we know about goats?
They stiffen up and fall over when they're scared?
Good, what else?
Ooh, I know! Their kids have the same name as our kids. Which is kids.
Yeah, that does open the door for some pretty hilarious puns. Anything else? Yes, you in the back?
You don't want to stare into their eyes for too long.
Well, class, I'll admit, you do know a bit about goats. But you're all forgetting the most iconic goat fact of all. You know,
their goats scream.
Oh, scream. Yeah.
Anyone who's anyone who knows anything about goats know that these rectangle-eyed demons make weird human-sounding screams. And we all find these little freaks of nature so funny that screaming goats get referenced in all sorts of media, like commercials and movies. And are still getting referenced as recently as 2024. So why then did Peter Griffin call this a sheep?
Sorry, guys. Somebody emailed me a video of a sheep screaming.
Now that I think about it, Conan O'Brien called this a sheep, too.
There's a viral video going around of a sheep. This is real.
And if this really is a goat, why is the original video called The Screaming Sheep?
And I've never, ever in my life seen a sheep or met a sheep that sounds like this.
Take a good look, because this is the face that will haunt your dreams.
What did you see?
Lamb. Ah! They were screaming.
That was the worst Super Bowl call in the history of the Super
Bowl. Sorry to burst the bubble, children.
People are saying it's fake and that it's dubbed over.
It's good. Ah!
This is real.
Chapter 1. Why did we all think this was a goat? This has to be like one of them Mandela effects, right? You're telling me this unedited 6-second video that shaped an entire generation's perception of what the common barn animal goats scream like wasn't even a goat? Someone's been pulling the wool over all of our eyes. Or maybe the original poster is deceptive and untrustworthy, and this really is a goat. Hey, I'm not gonna stand for you questioning the integrity of the original poster. They would never lie to us. Okay, let's see. All the other videos on their channel are of sheep. In fact, it's only sheep. I can't even find one stinking goat on this whole stinking farm. And if we get real investigating and use an internet archive, we can clearly see that the video was always called The Screaming Sheep. But I'm positive it's screaming goats we love so much, because if you type screaming goats into Amazon, you get all of the screaming goat merch, and if you type screaming sheep, you get all of the screaming goat merch. And, just because I have another example, in the Shaun the Sheep movie, they had a whole farm of sheep that any one of could have screamed, but it's the one and only goat character that goes... Granted, the sheep in the original video was just recently sheared, so I understand that it doesn't immediately give "this is a sheep" vibes. But were Peter Griffin and Conan O'Brien really the only ones who read the title while the rest of us collectively thought, I think I know what a goat sounds like, and that is definitely a goat. How did we get from a 6-second video of a screaming sheep to all these goats? Chapter 2. The beginning. According to this Google Trends graph, from 2005 to 2008, no one gave a shit about screaming goats. And that makes sense. No one knew they could do that. But then, just at the start of the 2008 housing market crash, we see a little bump. I believe this is because videos of animals making unexpected sounds
was kind of the thing back then. Videos like Man Goat and Man Argues with Spitting Goat made the rounds from 2008 to 2011, but their success kind of stayed on the internet, you know? Like, they were funny videos, but nothing I'd make a commercial about. 2012 rolled around, and people were done with screaming goats. But one user still had hope that, in time, people would once again care about screaming hooved animals. On the 8th of April, 2012, while everyone was enjoying a nice Easter Sunday on the Screaming Sheep Farms, the YouTube user AJQ2891 captured the exact moment that their recently sheared Oxford sheep Ophelia let out a humorous and completely genuine scream. Then, for the rest of the day, they painted eggs or something, I don't know. But then, on the very next day, AJ posted the video for the entire world to witness Ophelia's monumental sheep scream. And almost overnight, the video would be seen by no one. And it would stay that way for the next 5 months, until one day when the video would fall upon the eyes of a Redditor. And baby, I'm low on karma. Ophelia's video got posted on Reddit, and then reposted on Reddit, and then seemingly overnight, Ophelia the Screaming Sheep went viral. Ophelia was so beloved that she found herself off the internet too, on places like Conan and this British show RudeTube that I couldn't find clips for because I'm not British. With Screaming Sheep being the next viral sensation, AJQ quickly ran out to the farm, recorded another hilarious scream of Ophelia, and managed to record some of their screaming lambs. Guess that's why it's called the Screaming Sheep Farms. You know, just every animal here has a weird, unnatural scream. Honestly, it's a nightmare to live here. Also, we know it's Ophelia who stars in the Screaming Sheep 2 because we can see she's wearing the same ear tags in both videos. That, and she screams, like, identically in both videos. But that makes sense. You know, it's the same sheep, so of course it's going to sound the same. You know how consistent a sheep's screams are these days. We're not really going to be looking a whole lot at these two videos, but they're going to be important later on, so just keep them in the back of your mind. Things were looking great for our girl. She was beloved by millions of people who all found joy in listening to the soothing sounds of her completely genuine sheep scream. Chapter 3. Seriously, why did we all think this was a goat? I wasn't able to find the original Reddit post that exploded Ophelia into stardom, but we do know a Reddit post did exist because it was mentioned in the Screaming Sheep NFT description. Okay. Apparently, a lot of old viral videos are now non-fungible tokens. I don't really want to get into that right now. If we instead just shift our focus to the NFT's description, we find a lot of useful information. Like, this is the only place I've found where we learn Ophelia's real name. I'm hoping it's accurate. Now, this might just be how I read things, but when I read, "This is Ophelia. I filmed the Screaming Sheep Easter morning," I was under the impression Ophelia was the name of the person recording, AJQ. Luckily, we have the Screaming Sheep 2's NFT description to clear things up. See, I told you those videos are going to be important later on. Ophelia, the sheep featured in the original, is also the star of this video. Oh, I get it now. This is Ophelia. Like you're pointing at her. This is Ophelia. Hi, Ophelia. Anyways, getting back to that uncredited Reddit post, I was able to find this Reddit post from September 7th, 2012, but I have reasons to believe it still wasn't the Reddit post. However, this post does give us some valuable insight into what a viral Ophelia Reddit post may have looked like. Already, there were a surprising amount of people who were commenting things like, "Oh, take my upvote, kind stranger. Hey, you know what this video reminds me of? A different screaming goat video!" Since there had already been a precedent of goats being the common barn animal that made weird, unnatural screams, and because Ophelia had the most goat-looking haircut that day, that if someone told you, "This is a goat," you would believe them unquestionably, because why would someone lie about that? Turns out, people lied about it. Ophelia's video was featured in multiple and extremely popular goat screaming like people compilations. And I can't really blame the people who made these compilations because they couldn't make a whole separate sheep scream like people compilation. I've only found one other video of a sheep screaming that wasn't on AJQ's channel, and that's not enough to make a whole compilation. Misinformation about Ophelia's species was rampant. No one had an NFT description to fact check because Honestly, the concept of that is kind of insane. They just had to trust reputable news sources like Anderson Cooper to get his facts right. And even he couldn't do that!
Now, I've seen a lot of creepy goats on YouTube, like this one.
Chapter 4. I Knew You Were Trouble. In February 2013, the YouTube user Goosick had the brilliant idea of editing Ophelia's scream over a popular Taylor Swift song. Huh, don't you wish you thought of something like that, AJQ? Replacing the audio of something with a goofier and unexpected sound? People are so creative. I wish I could show you the specific edit that I'm talking about, but I know Miss Swift won't like it if I play even a second of her song, so we're just gonna have to do this. Never mind, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to assume you've already seen the edit that I'm talking about because it was viewed by everyone. Everyone saw this edit. Taylor Swift saw this edit. And she liked it.
It's good.
I know I don't usually tell stories about my personal life, but if you'll allow me this one time, I remember one night in 2013 being at a high school dance, and the Taylor Swift Goat song came on, and right when the beat dropped, all the teachers supervising hadn't a clue why the entire school screamed. It was because we were all mimicking that hilarious screaming sheep. Now, the issue with all of this is that Goosick titled their video, "I Knew You Were a Goat When You Walked In." So history's changed forever. February 2013 was the start of the screaming goat meme. During this time, there were plenty of real videos of real goats making real screams that were also shared and beloved by people. But there's no denying that Ophelia's scream was the goat of goat screams. And she's not even a goat! YouTubers react to goat remixes! Commercials featuring screaming goats! Hey, what animal did they get in YouTube Rewind 2013 to scream? Oh, that's right, it was the goat. As much as AJQ tried to remind people of Ophelia's species in the description, the damage was already done, and the meme had gone completely out of their control. You might think that, like any other meme, people would have their fun with it, but eventually they'd move on. But that didn't happen with this particular meme. No, Ophelia's goat scream was about to find a new home in Hollywood. In November 2014, something happened that caused people's interest in screaming goats to massively spike up. And I have no clue what caused that. I don't know. It's one of those unsolvable mysteries, I suppose. Look, in all of my research, I couldn't find anything significant that would have caused this massive spike. So think back. Did you ever use Google to search for screaming goats in November 2014? And if so, why? But while we're looking at the Google Trends graph, only 3 months later, we see another bigger peak in interest at February 2015. And I think I know what caused that. If I had to pick the most important date in screaming goat history, February 1st, 2015, would be like in the top five. Solid A tier for sure. On that specific Sunday, three different companies all released commercials referencing screaming goats. How did I know it was Sunday? Because it was Super Bowl Sunday, baby! You know, the season finale of football that gets around 114 million viewers? It's such an important football game that companies will pay top dollar for a couple seconds of ad space. And the 2015 Super Bowl, Super Bowl Xlix, aired two Screaming Goat commercials. One of them just using the original clip of Ophelia, which I'm still counting as a Screaming Goat commercial because the iSpot.tv page for this ad credits Ophelia as a goat. And that third non-Super Bowl commercial was just part of a Geico campaign, and they played a different ad from that campaign at the Super Bowl, but could you imagine if they played the goat one instead? That would have been so cool. Now, a new and bigger audience of people, people who watch sports, all believe that goats are the ones who scream like that. The reason this Super Bowl is so important to the screaming goat historian community is because this was the game that every animation studio executive watched and simultaneously agreed that screaming goats were the funniest, freshest thing ever. Think about it. You're an animation studio executive.
You see two Screaming Goat commercials during the same football game. A couple days later, you see a third Screaming Goat commercial. Hey, isn't it almost Chinese New Year? What animal is it this time? Oh, that would be the Year of the Goat! Within the next three-ish years, Screaming Goats were referenced in animated movies at a rate I've never seen memes get referenced in animated movies before. You couldn't escape Screaming Goats if you tried. Thor 4 beat you over the head with them, and they might be in Marvel Rivals, but I couldn't get these goats to scream when I played.
Come on, scream! Scream!
My theory is that people complained about it, so they took it out, but now I'm gonna complain about it for them to put it back in. And it really gets my goat that goats are remembered as the common barn animal who make that iconic scream, and it's unfair that calling someone a goat is a compliment, but calling someone a sheep is an insult! Goats have already taken enough from sheep! I need to calm down. So, what do you say, Ophelia? Think you can belt one more out for us? For old time's sake? Come on, girl. Do the scream!
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah.
Ophelia, why aren't you screaming? You were the one who screamed in the original video, right?
Yeah.
Chapter 6, working title, Deception. I'm not proud to admit this, but sometimes I'll watch a video at 2x speed. You know, like an iPad kid. But then YouTube will remember I did that and think I want to watch every video that fast. So it wasn't that jarring when I pulled up the original video and noticed Ophelia was obviously sped up. It only became jarring when I realized the video was playing at the normal speed. I caught this on, like, my 40th rewatch, but this is clearly sped up, right? I didn't do anything to this. This is how the clip has always been. So that means, at some point, this video was put into a video editing software and underwent...